Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to another edition of the Ron and Don program, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I am Ronald A. Edwards. My assistant, associate, Mr. Allen, is on academic assignment, and will possibly be joining us after the 1st of October. We hope to have him back by that time. A lot to talk about. Big meetings going on here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Meetings dealing with the issue of medical apartheid. I know there are many of you who have not necessarily read the book or heard the expression, but medical apartheid is something people really should be concerned about. If certain things being on Washington Avenue, 1500 block Washington Avenue in downtown Minneapolis, if you will, at least 150 participants, all of the top medical and psychological experts in the state of Minnesota, as well as guests from outside the state of Minnesota, Duke University, New York City University, Harvard. It's interesting, the group that is there. What is of some concern to this commentator is the absence of the absence of African Americans. For so long, we have been hearing, we the lay people, you know, that those of our quote-unquote professionals were on the ground floor, being involved, helping to set the policy and et cetera to deal with the issues of gun violence and trauma that goes with it and the mental health issues and et cetera, because, man, a lot of money is coming into our beloved enclave here in Minneapolis to deal with the mental health problems of the African American. As we have reported and said time and time again on this program, our television program, our newspaper columns, and et cetera, that we are the authors of, that ever since 2009, when then-Mayor R.T. Ryback positioned his manifesto and position paper, his white position paper, or white paper, as they like to call it, to the Conference of Mayors, we have been watching the preparation here in the city of Minneapolis and by extension the Twin Cities, dealing with the Negro mental problem, if you will, and tendency and trends towards violence and et cetera. And it was interesting today to see a gathering which you could count the African Americans who were there amongst the 150 invited guests, if you will. You could count them on two hands and maybe have not to count the next week we will deal with the names of some of those that were positioned, workshops, outstanding information coming forward that created some controversy, but because of a promise and guarantee that we made as a journalist, we will not discuss that until some future point in time. But the amount of information that came forward during this all-day conference, and it'll be all day again tomorrow, if you will, information ranging with violence, suicide, if you will, the predominance of suicides amongst Caucasians, if you will, the level of violence involving young African Americans, if you will, the statistical data that has been prepared and is in place and et cetera is extremely interesting, if you will. But in the final analysis, the African American community, with the exception of a select group of eight, will not have, quote unquote, a place at the table. And that is so sad. In fact, there was discussion today. We got into discussion. Today there is a member of the Nobel Prize Committee, if you will, Forum, which is attached through Augsburg College, a prominent Lutheran college here in the city of Minneapolis, again, Augsburg College. It is quite a setting, quite a group, quite a gathering. Some of the top minds here in the state of Minnesota and from around the country, if you will, again, talking about the issue of violence, gun violence, and et cetera. Tomorrow, in closed session, there will be specific and detailed discussion. Law enforcement is there, if you will. We are not at liberty to indicate what it is that they will be discussing at this particular point in time. As we first exclusively reported weeks ago after a similar conference, again at the Marriott. I tell you, the Marriott has been making a lot of money, man, dealing with invitees and guests who are coming here to the Twin Cities. The conference on black youth violence and the formula for corrective action was attended by individuals from as far away as California, Florida, that's where the tornado hit, Buffalo, New York, Boston, New York, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Cleveland, New York City, Washington, D.C., Baltimore, Charlotte, North Carolina, Atlanta, Georgia, Jacksonville, Florida, Orlando, Florida, Texas. That was before the Hurricane Harvey hit there along the eastern coast of the Texas Gulf, if you will, Houston representation, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Little Rock, if you will, Denver, Colorado. Of course, Minneapolis's mayor, Betsy Hodges, hosted that particular convention. This one, as we said, is being hosted by a combination of the Minnesota Mental Health Project, if you will. Tremendous amount of monies are coming in, being put forward, placed in play, if you will. We wish in some regards that we would have already been released from our promise with regards to the confidentiality of this conference. But we must stand by, quote unquote, our promise and our committed word, if you will. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll be providing. Beth McDonough, though, of Channel 5, the ABC affiliate here in the Twin Cities, again, Beth McDonough, was in some of the sessions, but she is also under a covenant of restriction, confidentiality, if you will. But knowing Beth, Beth will find a way to make sure the information gets out over a period of time. Very deep discussions, very, as we said earlier, revealing numbers, if you will, regards to issues such as urban and rural violence, if you will, suicides. Information has been developed which raised real concerns about the prominence of suicides in America and who it is that is really carrying out acts of suicide against themselves and sometimes as a part of suicide and murders and et cetera. But these are so important because we have been told as a journalist and a longtime activist in this community since 1959 that those of us, quote unquote, who sit at the very highest level of conference and confidentiality and et cetera, or right there, working closely with the beloved and legendary Dr. Chiquette, if you will, formerly of Rochester, New York, and a member of the very interesting project that was conducted by Columbia University in New York City. Again, that particular facet can be recaptured and recovered in the book Medical Apartheid. We're going to say medical apartheid a couple of times. The dark history of medical experimentation on black Americans from colonial times to the present. a outstanding African-American researcher, Harriet A. Washington, if you will, tremendous credentials. Maybe if we receive any requests, we will go more into detail with Ms. Washington's expertise and this book, a book that was slammed by some, but ultimately the medical societies, if you will, indicated that she did an excellent job. Her empirical research data and et cetera was unquestionable, if you will, was even beyond expectations. We first talked about it here in the Twin Cities about 4 years ago. We introduced it on both our television program here in the Twin Cities and our radio programs, if you will, and on his newspaper columns. We said then to some who said they were working closely with Dr. Cicchetti, particularly working out at a county-controlled facility called North Point in North Minneapolis and an entity called UROC, University of Minnesota's regional facility. We're both right in the heart of Minneapolis, just both of them, both across the street on opposite sides from the Urban League of Minneapolis. We said then that there were things that were happening. There was experimental kinds of operations going on, medical and et cetera. Leaders were rolled out and basically said it was untrue. Of course, we ultimately provided documentation. What the concentration is now is on a number of programs under the auspices of the city. In fact, we had a statement made today in one of the meetings that a significant amount of money from the Bloomberg Foundation was not being used to deal with gang violence, if you will, and other kinds of activities, drugs and et cetera. We know that not to be true, and we were really surprised that representatives of the current mayor of our city insisted that there was no relationship between the Bloomberg Foundation. They've maintained that the money that they're receiving now is from the Department of Justice dealing with preparation, intel gathering, you know, and gathering up intelligence information, similar to what is done in Chicago. Not. By the way, we are not prohibited from talking about that because the city's representative was not present at the time that the confidentiality was discussed, and based on misrepresentations made with regards to the funding and et cetera, we take the position here on the Ron and Don program that we are not bound nor obligated nor required to maintain confidentiality over a program that now we were told in the presence of 35 individuals, counting the representative from office, okay, there is no money from any private foundation or et cetera being spent, and that all of the money being spent on the GVI, which actually in the annals of the Department of Justice is the Gang Violence Intervention Program. They've changed it to talk about that it is the Group of Violence Initiative, if you will. That is just not factual. In fact, documentation on file with the Department of Justice clearly indicates the real purpose of the program, genesis of the program, and et cetera. The reason that all of this is important is that there were very, very deep discussions, panel discussions, and et cetera, starting at 9 o'clock this morning here in Minneapolis again at the Marriott Courtyard Hotel on the 1500 block of Washington Avenue South on the edge of downtown Minneapolis. A powerful group. We cannot impress upon our listening audience tonight, and this is about the fourth time that we've said this, the experts, eminently qualified, well-degreed, if you will, of persons who were there and were very much involved in the proceedings and the discussions on the black problem, if you will. We stayed for a particular presentation made by a gentleman from England, if you will, now teaching school here in the United States. Again, we can't go into the specific details at this particular moment. We happen to be the only African-American in the room. There were at least 35 individuals in that meeting, if you will. Many of them in the medical profession, if you will, law enforcement and et cetera. And I have to tell my friends here in the Twin Cities and in the black community, it was shocking. Oh, let me tell you how it kind of happened, is that I came in kind of like the back door, and I was sitting behind everyone, if you will, and people did not really realize I was in the meeting until they would maybe get up to leave, and that by that time that was 85 to 90% of the meeting had been completed. But I will have to share with some of my close associates, if you will, confidentially, some of the things that were said with regard to the Negro problem, if you will. The facilitator was caught in a bad position because he could not, particularly in that, of course, I was wearing, if you will, and so he knew that I was a official participant, if you will, and so he could not do the normal kind of call out so that these some folks would turn and look back at, in the back of the room. I played that card specifically because I felt that I was reading this British national correctly, if you will. But it was near the end of the meeting, really the last 17, 18 minutes of this particular meeting. The particular meeting is a part of the agenda that is shown in public documents, but how you get to them is up to you, if you will. But it was the discussion with regards to the threat that African Americans pose to law enforcement and to the white community. Yes, yes, we had a very interesting conversation and discussion in which we even talked about, quote-unquote, the concerns about the safety of the white community with regards to, see, the code word that's oftentimes used, us. And, in fact, at one point, even prior to some real interesting questions coming from the white participants, there was a series of photographs, if you will, and slides, if you will, of information obtained from the Chicago Police Department. For those of you that are there in our beloved Chicago, if you will, who worked tirelessly to protect the sons and daughters of the African and etc., you should be made aware. Also, the name of Mr. Kennedy, a man who became a legend, allegedly, given his activities during the operation of street operations in Boston, Massachusetts, if you will, but who later now serves as an adjunct professor at John Jay College there in New York City, for those of you listening in from New York. Mr. Kennedy, who first showed up here, Twin Cities in 1994, to deal with the African-American gang problem, if you will, is in fact legendary, if you will, in understanding how to put together the necessary operational plan to deal with the Negro problem, if you will. Some of his recommendations are still in place in Boston, particularly in South Boston. They are definitely in play in Harlem, the Bronx, if you will, you know, Brooklyn, and et cetera. But the reason that was interesting, the name of Mr. Kennedy, there's a book that Mr. Kennedy has put out, and it talks in terms of the policies, the necessary operational plan, which would include the possibility of the detainment of large numbers of African Americans. And in some regards, it is a part of what Miss Washington, or Harriet A. Washington, the author of the outstanding publication, Medical Apartheid, talked about when she talked about a program emanating out of Columbia University, again under the auspices, not totally, if you will, and absolutely, but as a part of a coordinated effort working on Dr. Chiocchetti's experimental program in Rochester, New York. For those of you in the Rochester, New York area, particularly in the public housing projects there in Rochester, New York, 10 years ago or thereabouts, you know what I'm saying. I well remember when quietly the University of Minnesota sent one of our African-American leaders who now is involved in running a government project, a CAP agency, if you will, across the river, and sent him out to meet with Dr. Chiocchetti as Dr. Chiocchetti was being prepared to be brought here to the University of Minnesota to begin his experimental work. And I got to tell you, he has been very successful with regards to the application of medication, if you will, opiates, oops, and other kinds of medications, which has created a significant epidemic of addiction and et cetera here in Minneapolis, lesser degree St. Paul. In fact, we have reached a point here in my beloved Shangri-La, Minnesota, where we are now averaging 2 opiate deaths a day, 2 a day. That would be in a 30-day month, 60. In the Twin Cities, and we are basically being told that there is a kind of a suppression of the now increasing percentage of both whites and blacks that are dying from opiates and et cetera. The reason this becomes so critical is that Governor Christie of New Jersey, Republican of New Jersey, who was appointed by President Donald Trump to head up the opiates committee and take a look at the problem of opiates in the United States, has made his preliminary report to President Donald Trump with recommendations to Attorney General Jeff Sessions of the Department of Justice, who is already on the move. The federal court system has been notified of the development of special narcotics courts, if you will. We began to do that at a state level here almost a decade ago. You go into drug court, your sentence, if you're black, is a whole lot different than what the white boy gets, if you know what I mean. But Jeff Sessions has basically indicated that his target, in fact, it's already started, for those of you that are in Chicago who are in the know, who spend time looking at what's going on around you, if you will, the special program and the beginning of the roundup has begun. In fact, one of the models that is now being used, and it was so sad that our Latino Hispanic brothers got tricked in the quote-unquote identifying dreamers, if you will, in the United States, over 800,000. I saw a congressman try to say there's only 690,000. this fake news from these people is out of sight. But anyways, the Department of Justice and Jeff Sessions, and this is all a part of some of the reflections made today in this very high-powered and deep meeting and series of discussions about the problem of violence, basically concentrating on guns, but also talking in terms of mental health, suicide, and et cetera. And so Sessions has now made available to the monitoring entities, in other words, those that do surveillance, intelligence gathering, and then coordinate the arrest and detention, if you will, have begun. The names are out there, if you will. Concentration right now is in California, and as quiet as it's kept, in Texas, because right now in Texas, attention is directed towards the cleanup of Harvey, if you will, along the eastern coast of Texas, if you will, and basically Corpus Christi, north to Beaumont and Port Arthur and et cetera. And so it was interesting today to listen to some conversations, particularly in this meeting that I just talked to you about, of how these things need to be facilitated. The facilitation of beginning to round the African Americans up. And I'd be damned if in the course of a conversation we came across documentations that talked about a similar plan in Germany in the 1930s, a plan which identified enemies of the state, if you will, not just the Jews, if you will, gypsies, even the small black African population in Germany, which had come from the colonial days before the First World War, for those of you that don't know your history. In fact, the black colonial Africans in Germany around 1933-34 were some of the first to be pulled out of their homes and off the street and sent to the concentration camps. That's a piece of the history that no one talks about. It was a small black African colonial population in Germany. It quickly disappeared by, late 1935, maybe early 1936. There were some still left in the concentration camps. Well, anyways, the documents began to be discussed today in this meeting, if you will, with regards to the plan, the master plan, if you will. Code name, interesting code name, Thunderbolt. For those of you that are real students of the National Socialist Party, the Nazis, if you will, need to remind yourself of that, because that is one of the codings that has been coming out of Sandpoint, Idaho, and Mars, North Carolina. Oh, people have said, man, how you get into Mars, North Carolina? I said, well, all you have to do is go look at the maps, if you will. And if you're bold enough, you know, you can drive down to North Carolina and go to the furthest part of western North Carolina. And you will find the town of Mars, North Carolina. If you're black, you know, and you got that much doubt, you know, all you got to do is pull into one of the fill stations down there and ask Billy Bob some directions, and we'll see if we ever hear from you again. Just as that happens even with greater frequency out in a place called Sandpoint, Idaho, and particularly if you decide to stop at some of those rest spots and motels in and around Spirit Lake, if you will, Spirit Mountains, and et cetera. We, in the situation in Charlottesville, we saw some white neo-Nazi marauders, well-dressed, well-armed, if you will, and recognize some of them as individuals who have been participating in the training facilities in Idaho and in western North Carolina. We say all that to say that the Jeff Sessions Department of Justice has really put together a plan, an interesting and dangerous plan, that talks about how and when the plan of Thunderbolt, which is being reused, by the way, under Operation Thunderbolt in Germany, Nazi Germany in the 1930s. And lo and behold, some maintain that it is a reincarnation, if you will, of Operation Thunderbolt here in the United States. In fact, for some of you out there in Arizona, you are somewhat aware of it, because it was a plan that was directed unmercifully at Latino, Hispanics, and et cetera, in Arizona. And it may be something that one may want to take a look at and familiarize oneself. Now, we take you back for tonight's program as we move into the last half hour. We take you back and we encourage now. We encourage the listening audience, both internationally and domestically, to attempt to buy copies of the book, Medical Apartheid. Get a real good feeling on how long experimental medicine, you know, for those of you who are experts, if you will, who take great pride in knowing and reciting the history of Nazi Germany, the emergence from the beer hall, if you will, in Munich, of the man by the name of Adolf Hitler, if you will, in his book Mein Kampf, and etc. Refresh yourself, because some of the planning that was in place by 1931, as Hitler had pulled himself up from being in a sleazy beer hall in Munich, Germany, to being, quote-unquote, being summoned by Chancellor Hindenburg to become the new, quote-unquote, leader of what was called a democratic Germany, but was about to become a national socialist stronghold, if you will. Now, since Jeff Sessions became Attorney General of the United States of America and began to put in play his plans of both creation and destruction being the dismantling of civil rights, if you will, other kinds of guarantees for African Americans, others of color, and for other classes of individuals, if you will. We have watched closely the surveillance that is taking place quietly across the country. Only by the grace of God, these two storms have probably delayed, because there was money that has to be spent, because the Republican Senate and particularly the House in the 2018 midterm elections. And so some of that federal dollars, if you will, has to be spent in those states that will be encouraged to reelect Republicans back into the House of Representatives and to a lesser degree the United States Senate. So it takes us to the surprise that was Charlottesville. Folks have basically told black commentators and analysts and et cetera on a couple of our channels, if you will, to stay away from analyzing or raising too many questions about those well-armed, well-disciplined, very well-disciplined, and very effective intelligence gatherers, neo-Nazis, if you will, with support from Ku Klux Klan and white supremacists. There's not been the kind of conversation. Of course, the issue is that we've got to be concerned about these natural disasters, and you do. Only problem is that this latest hurricane tore apart the Paradise Islands. And by the way, particularly those islands in the Caribbean that are under both British, Dutch, even Danish, French supervision, those governments really do not have the interest or the capacity to provide a safety net to the quote-unquote black indigenous people of those islands, if you will. And it'll be interesting to see what the Trump administration says, with the exception of the American Virgin Islands, which already is suggesting to its black citizens in the American Virgin Islands that they need not rush to try to find comfort and safety in, quote-unquote, the mainland, that, you know, they'll be secure there in the Virgin Islands. The situation in those islands, be they British protectorates, the French protectorates, the Danish protectorates, if you will, was devastating. The resources and et cetera that would be forthcoming from a possession or protectorate under the United States, such as Guam, if you will, Wake Island, you know, and definitely a state like Hawaii that is greatly separated from the mainland, as is to a lesser degree Alaska, case of Hawaii by water and etc. But immediately any catastrophe that would befall Hawaii and the brown-skinned people of that nation state would in fact be handled by the powerful resources, starting with the fact that the United States has a very large naval base in Hawaii, Pearl Harbor, a couple of significant and very large airfields, and et cetera. But there in the Caribbean, as people suffer and are basically without shelter and et cetera, as we said just minutes ago, the British, the French, if you will, really don't have the, and the Dutch, don't really have the interests to really spend the necessary monies to provide a recovery, if you will, and to help build those paradises. In fact, I've already heard discussions by shortwave radio of talking in terms of regeneration of the quote-unquote Caribbean era islands, the so-called. And just as a kind of an aside, keep your eye on that. For those of you that are from those islands who are black, if you will, who have still have loved ones there and et cetera, be they American possessions or French possessions or British possessions or Dutch or whatever, periodically check on your loved ones and see what the new policies are with regards to, including our own American Virgin Islands, what the policies are for relocating, coming into the United States, and et cetera. We all can well remember how the Haitians have been treated on two or three different situations in the last two centuries, if you will. We are watching closely how our brothers and sisters in Puerto Rico are being trusted and being dealt with, if you will. And when we say being trusted, because there's an argument that too many of these Puerto Ricans reminds them of the president's immigration ban. So Puerto Ricans have an altogether different standing as it pertains to their relationship and right to come into the United States of America. But watch that closely, because there's already talk that some of these brown-skinned people cannot necessarily mingle or fit in, quote-unquote, with the indigenous population, white indigenous population of the mainland. Keep your eye on these kinds of things. And so that takes us back to today, tonight, if you will, on this program, to a very important, well-structured, if you will, excellent presentation, significant, in-depth professional discussions about the problems of violence and guns, if you will, and then the whole situation of suicide, the imbalance of the African-American community in America. See, when we talk about imbalance, we're talking about people who maintain that there is a continued regression, if you will, of the African-American capabilities, intellectually, et cetera. You know, there are some of our brothers and sisters who work in corporate America, who work in big government, if you will. I'm not expecting the brother or sister who's, you know, off at the floor and et cetera to know these things. But there are some of you out there in my African-American community who know the kind of discussions that have been going on for quite some time. There's We're continuing to lose our edge, if you will, that which gives us an opportunity to do at least a minimal amount of competing, if you will, and that we the sons and daughters of the African, have kind of lost that edge, and some of it has to do with the social and mental imbalance in the black community, if you will. If our test scores continue to plummet, if you will, graduation rates continue to plummet, if you will. You have a Secretary of Education in the Trump Committee. The only thing that she cares about doing is talk in terms of how many more young African Americans can be suspended, but only after the particular private corporation gets the necessary federal dollars for allegedly admitting these young Negroes into the public schools. By the way, on another note, a communication was sent to us a couple days ago from friends and associates in Flint, Michigan, saying that they hope to God, man, that at some point someone will talk about what is really happening and continues to happen in Flint, in a situation in which the population of Flint, African American and poor whites, were intentionally poisoned. You know, we don't have any discussion about that. In fact, there really wasn't enough discussion during the final months of the Obama administration, but there's been absolutely none now. But people are not keeping an eye on a combination of things that also represent the difference of departments of government, health and human services, and et cetera. And every once in a while, one of the Detroit papers tried to, you know, point out that there's something going on. There's been some criticism of how the African-American population has been treated. And then periodically in the black papers, there are an article about the kind of infectious diseases and et cetera that are confronting the black population in Flint, Michigan. And everything ranging from skin rashes to other kinds of problems with serious problems with your skin, if you will, deterioration, if you will, of nerves, muscle, and et cetera. But I don't hear anybody talking about it. In fact, we've been monitoring through our special organization. We've been monitoring all of the white media and the African-American commentators, male and female, on some of these programs. And almost without exception, there's no longer any discussion about Flint. Now, again, the reason that we talked about Flint, we love doing this because most of the time we're never in a position as African, and going back and recovering the necessary documentation to talk in terms and to support what it is that we are talking about. And so tonight, you know, we pinpoint the excellent book by Harriet, A Washington Medical Apartheid. Let me read the subtitle again. The Dark History of Medical Experimentation on Black Americans from Colonial Times to the Present. And I know I hear people who indicate that's just not true, that, you know, we had the problem of Tuskegee, if you will. But that was just a situation that came about and emerged, and a couple of white doctors at the Veterans Hospital in Tuskegee kind of, you know, overstepped themselves and et cetera. I mean, come on, man. The Muskegee experiment was as well planned as, quote unquote, the lynching of Negroes during that same period of time and going all the way back to when Willie Lynch used to tell the white plantation owners how to, quote unquote, provide fear and terror into the hearts of their slaves. Yeah, Willie Lynch. Don't talk about him much either. But I want to go back in closing to Flint, Michigan. I would strongly suggest and ask some of you, particularly those of you that like to work with computers and things, go back and take a look at when there has been a real serious discussion or communication via the web net, websites, and et cetera, of how our black folks are doing in Flint, Michigan. How many are still on special medication and et cetera, if you will? How many still do not have fresh running water and have not received those filters that they were promised, if you will? Those filters that supposedly were to purge, quote-unquote, that poor water. And how many of that new, how much of that new piping that was to alleviate the problem has really been done at Flint? We owe it to the brothers and sisters who suffered and continue to suffer so terribly. We at least owe them that there is an interest beyond the corporate and city limits of Flint, Michigan, if you will. That whole quote-unquote plan of genocide was horrendous to the future. Because, see, the thing that people have stopped talking about is that so many children, so many babies were affected by, quote-unquote, the parasites and et cetera that were in the drinking water, the water itself. The lack of significant medication and et cetera, quote, eliminate, and to guarantee the elimination of the parasites and other kinds of materials, if you will, that was in the drinking water as that, quote, unquote, began to build up a resistance in the bodies of African Americans, particularly children. So we don't talk about that anymore. But I can tell you this, that there's more than a general discussion going on in some quarters about finding Pacific situations and cities with heavy black populations to see how, quote-unquote, things can be rerouted, if you will. Let's say this also. I find it interesting as we speak tonight here from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul, the number of African Americans in Florida who have fallen ill in the last 12 to 14 hours, first of all, of course, power is still out, significant amount of power. I mean, for those of you that know the South and those of you that live or have lived in Florida, you know, man, to have no power, to have no air conditioning, not even able to run a fan or et cetera, but also the whole situation with the water and the contamination that is going on. Now, there are special pieces of equipment that are being brought in by the military, particularly in places like Naples, Florida, the right kind of places, if you will, up towards Sarasota and Bradenton. But this kind of equipment, if you will, purification equipment and et cetera, is being concentrated really in and around only the right kind of neighborhoods. So for those of you that have friends and relatives in Florida, as an example, once again, using as an illustration, as a premise, if you will, the book Medical Apartheid, which talks in terms of experimental medicine going all the way back, man, to colonial times, if you will, and stopping off at Tuskegee, Alabama. Oh, for those of you that may feel that you don't know what we're talking about when we talk about Tuskegee, think about black men being infected with syphilis, if you will. Think about, and by the way, the numbers were published many, many years ago. In fact, it was a white doctor in Rochester, New York. Oops, same place we were talking about earlier. It was a white doctor who had spent over a decade researching what had happened at Tuskegee. Black researchers and black physicians were having a problem being published, if you will. And this white physician decided that he would take on the chore. And, of course, in, what was it, 1948, he published a, what they call white paper, a physician paper, talking in terms of the Tuskegee experiment, if you will. And the conservative number, based on the number of African-American men that were infected with syphilis, was that it probably cost the lives of newborn Negro babies between 200 and 400,000 when you talk in terms of, quote-unquote, generations, if you will. See, we never go the American medical Association maintains that they have the figures, but it was the National Medical Association, which is the black association, that actually produced around 1939, 1940, the actual numbers of African Americans that have been forever, quote unquote, affected, violated, never to, quote unquote, be able to produce a, quote unquote, clean air, if you will, in other words, child sibling, and et cetera. All of this is important because we had a chance to attend today here in beloved Shangri-La in Minnesota at a downtown hotel, if you will, with no more than 8 African Americans of 150 people gathered, invited, if you will. We had a chance to attend and to listen to the real discussion, which unfortunately points its way towards the future of the African American, the sons and daughters of the African, if you will. Now, people oftentimes, you know, in a cavalier manner, dismiss black researchers, if you will, black town criers, if you will, black journalists, if you will, prize winners, if you will, and great researchers such as Dr. Washington. And because that game is able to be played in our lifetime, our future suffers. Our future is obstructed. Our future is denied the opportunity to be our future, if you will. We say to you oftentimes on these programs as we come down to the last 5.5 minutes of this program, that if we do not commit ourselves to an investment in the future of the sons and daughters of the African, then you can believe that some other folks are not going to invest anything to you. In fact, one of the things that I said in the meeting today is that we were working in a small group, if you will, and I said, you know, what many of you white folks don't understand is that there are more African Americans, black people, who understand that we, since time immemorial, in other words, the not only the founding of this republic, but the introduction of a relationship between people of color, that we, the sons and daughters of the African, have always been seen as nothing more than property, if you will. We're not really seen as a living, breathing human being treated with dignity and respect, and whose life is as important as anybody else. You know, we have known for a long time that in many of the medical facilities of our beloved nation, a white child, a white baby, is considered to be much more precious, if you will, much more important, and certainly is anointed and provided with the privilege of having all of the best the medical system can provide so that child may live. African-American babies don't enjoy that same doctrine. And so again, we say it for the 8th time, the book, Medical Premier, for those of you that are, you know, buff, if you will, on social media and things like that, and then begin to do some research for once. Because, you know, researching hip-hop and et cetera is not the thing that's going to keep you here, my brothers and sisters. What's going to be able to keep you here is to recognize the enemy and recognize the threat to the continuation and to the survival of the sons and daughters of the African. And let me say this again. We received a couple text messages from security sources, if you will. Those two sites that we have named on a couple of occasions to you, you know, Sandpoint, Idaho, Mars, North Carolina, if you will, don't you ever stop believing. Them boys down there, them bitter bobs, them cats that some of you paid attention to, representing the rear guard of all of them crazies that was marching, you know what I mean, carrying torches and et cetera, and singing the Nazi songs and et cetera, you know, soil to blood, blood to soil, and et cetera. Don't you believe them cats that y'all saw with them AK-47s, if you will, with them AR-15s and 16s, and with those other automatic weapons and et cetera. Don't you believe for a minute, my friend, in Charlottesville, Virginia, a number of weeks ago, that if there had been enough black people present during those confrontations, that they would not have hesitated. In fact, in a document that has been recovered from, quote-unquote, a meeting in Sandpoint, Idaho, that they actually, the neo-Nazis, the white supremacists, men who at one point served in the United States Armed Forces. I mean, you could tell they were military. They were well-dressed, well-armed, and et cetera. They had actually established a number of how many African-Americans they thought they would be able to kill in Charlottesville, if you will. They were greatly disappointed that there were so few African-Americans who took to the streets to do pitched battle with them. They had it well designed, well set up, if you will. They had their plan of initiation and their plan of retreat, if you will, well planned, well coordinated. That's why, you know, with all the talking that all the talking heads like to do, including a couple of blacks on these cable programs, including even Fox, it's amazing how they don't spend any time talking about the logistical preparation and planning that went into those groups in the order of their severity of danger that they represent to the good of the nation, neo-Nazis, and any other group of individuals that came up from different places. Oh, by the way, in closing, there was a very interesting detachment of quote-unquote guardians slash defenders who actually had come up from North Carolina. And they were a prime part. That's how we identified a couple of individuals because of information, picture, section that had been taken in regards to the training facilities in the mountains of western North Carolina and definitely in the mountains of northern Idaho. Well, let us never be, as we always say on a television program here in the Twin Cities, let us never be that race or group of people because we didn't believe that the planning for genocide against the sons and daughters of the African was fully engaged and was a clear and present danger. We repeat that again, a clear and present danger. Don't you ever think that these folks is not baking a cake for you. Stay strong, Black America, and we will continue to offer our prayers. I'm Ron Edwards. This is the Ron and Don program coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Good evening.